Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for listening to What Mama Wants. I kind of think Mother Earth wants less toxics and more health for her planet. This is a chance to hear from educators, citizens, policymakers, and scientists about the role toxics are playing in our daily lives. Things like mercury, PFAS, and pesticides. And we always wonder what Mother Earth wants while we're at it. My guest today is Dr. Diana Cunningham. She's the director of Friends of Cathedral Tree Sanctuary, a conservation burial ground in southern Oregon. Her research on the harms of mercury pollution related to cremation led her to write a book called The New American Way of Death, which is still at the publishers. Steeped in a science background as a naturopathic doctor, Diana is able to both sound the alarm on mercury toxicity and offer some hope-filled solutions to the heavy burdens our bodies are carrying and our ecosystem is carrying. So thank you so much for coming on What Mama Wants today, Diana.
Oh, you're welcome, Kate. And I'm so glad to be here because it was really after my mother died about 10 years ago when she was cremated, I had no idea how much mercury was really going to go up with her in smoke and in the vapors. There's several points I want to make here, but one is that, you know, it takes time for us to connect the dots, but when we have information about mercury, we can realize really how dangerous it is when we breathe it in from crematory vapors, when we eat it in our fish, a thermometer that breaks, or any number of things like that, even in a lot of cosmetics that we find over the counter, cold creams and skin lightening creams and eye drops and a lot of things we sort of take for granted and use every day that we just don't even know mercury's in there.
I know that you're doing some amazing things, which I definitely want to discuss, but if we could start with mercury, I'd like that because I believe that's the core of your work and your motivations. With the really kind of simple idea, what is mercury? You know, for those of us who have been pretty far from high school chemistry, help us out.
Yes. So mercury is actually a naturally occurring substance in the earth. It's deep down in the earth and it's mined by humans, mostly in China now. It's pulled up out of the ground as a rock and it's broken apart and it's made into a hard metal or a soft metal or a liquid. And so then it's exported from largely from China. It used to be mainly from Spain, but now Spain is working with the Minamata Convention to shut down those mercury mines by 2030. China has no intention to do that right now. So when that is mined out of there, it's used to create all kinds of things. At room temperature, it's this little silver bead like you find in a broken thermometer, or it's a liquid like you'd find in a chemistry lab. And when it's in a rock form, it's called elemental mercury. And that's what you often find in a dental amalgam. And so in a filling, they combine it with silver. So it's 50% mercury, and then a large amount of silver, and then tin and copper. And that's put together in a blend. It's been used for 200 years by the American Dental Association as a very inexpensive but durable filling in your teeth when you have, you know, a hole in your teeth. And the problem with that mercury is that it's not just inert in your mouth. It's actually vaporizing all the time. When you're chewing, when you're drinking coffee, when you're drinking hot liquids, tea, anything like that, all that mercury vapor is actually coming out. And you can see this in Dr. Boyd Haley's documentary where they use a special kind of camera and they can show the vapors coming out of the mouth.
Yeah, I saw that. That's evidence of harm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's an amazing documentary to watch because it really shows you in a real way what mercury vapors are.
Yeah. And people who are exposed to a lot of these mercury vapors, what are some of the side effects that they suffer? How do we know?
Yeah, the symptoms, they start out as typical toxicity symptoms like headaches, chronic headaches, weakness, behavioral changes, irritability, anxiety, and also insomnia. So they have difficulty sleeping. You have this kind of restless state, this irritability, heightened state. You know, it's because your nervous system is being affected. So what happens is we breathe in these vapors or they're in our mouth or we live near a crematory or someplace and we breathe that in and we start having brain fog or memory losses, difficulty thinking, And those are the early signs. And then if you continue to inhale these vapors, which go into your nose, up through your synovial cavity, and directly into your brain, where they're caught, they're held in there. And about 80% of those inhalations go into the brain, and about 20% go into your lungs. So we know this from science over the past 30 years. And then you start having tremors, twitching, extreme chronic fatigue, like dental health workers, crematory workers, they start having chronic fatigue symptoms and kind of like this vague neurological symptoms, twitching, and not everybody has the same symptoms. So that's what's difficult about mercury is you can have 10 different symptom pictures from the same respiratory inhalation.
Yeah, and fascinatingly, you can have two people exposed to the same vapors and one gets quite sick and one does not.
Exactly. And the problem with mercury is that we're all susceptible because of the increasing loads of mercury in the global airstream, in the global water stream, in our watersheds, in our oceans, and even in our kitchens, our bathrooms, our cosmetic drawers. You know, we have increasing loads. And so what we now have is not just like the traditional Mad Hatter syndrome or earthism is what it's now called, but we have like pink skin disease, MS, dementias, learning disabilities in children, chronic hyperactivity, irritability, even mental health syndromes and illnesses that are not recognized as mercury. For example, anxiety, depression, chronic depression, outbursts, and all kinds of dementias, Parkinson's dewilia, ALS, Lewy body disease, ADD. And, you know, that's just what's been documented so far. And the effects of mercury are being studied heavily in Japan. We now have 50 years of studies, and the universities have gone in and really created hospitals to deal with mercury disease because of this huge disaster that happened in the 1930s to 1960s. And so they have children and babies and adults and elderly, all people who have various levels of mercury-induced, what they call Mignamata disease. And it really sort of looks very similar to muscular sclerosis. People are in wheelchairs, they can't function in normal life. Mm-hmm. And what I want to say is that, you know, we like to think that those people out there have acute or chronic disease, but we're actually all affected. There's nobody on this planet who isn't affected by mercury. It's in our fatty tissues, it's in our brains, it's everywhere. And we might not have a direct exposure, but we're all, to some degree, carrying around a certain amount in our livers and our brains and our adipose tissues.
I think generally when I hear people talk about this, it tends to be around dental fillings. But the part I had never thought about was, how about that stuff that's stored in our fat tissues and our brains? That's all going up in smoke in a crematory process.
Yeah. And so my mother died and she had about 8 mercury dental fillings in her mouth. I had taken her to a dentist about 6 months before she died of dementia. And the dentist said, well, you could take them out, but she's terminal anyway, so why bother? And that was in Colorado. She died in 6 months of dementia. She had it for 14 years and had an early onset dementia, starting at about age 66. And when she died, it never occurred to me that all of that mercury in her mouth would go up in the crematory vapors. And she had elected as a lower class, middle class income woman to have a cremation because it was the least expensive. And she thought it was an easy and simple way to go. And, you know, for people in coastal areas like in Maine and all along the East Coast and the West Coast, we have very high rates of cremation now, 50 to 70% in most states. And so cremation is on the rise. It's owned largely by a single corporation, Service Corps International, which also owns Neptune and Trident. And they sell to small business owners, and or they buy up a lot of cemeteries and crematoriums and then own them. So they don't have any filters for mercury on their crematoriums. They have tried. They've tried putting in extra chimneys and this kind of thing, but they're not adequate. And during President Obama's administration, it took about 10 years for the coal burning plant industry to get filters on all their coal burning plants to hold the mercury. And because mercury is so tiny, it's only 2 microns in these, it's very hard to filter. And you can't do it with an extra chimney. You know, the mercury just lines the chimneys of these crematories. And they've tried putting on certain kinds of filters, but, you know, nothing is really adequate to contain mercury. So it's my belief, like in Sweden, that the government and the EPA should require all crematories to put mercury filters on every crematory in this country. And what Sweden did was they said, if you don't have these filters on within a certain amount of time, and I think it was 2 months, they said, you'll have to shut down. And when you realize how dangerous mercury is to our health immediately and to the health of everybody on the planet, not to mention all the creatures on the planet, you go, this is a no-brainer. This is what we need. This is what Mother Earth wants now.
And I'm so glad to know that Sweden took action. And I wondered if you had any ideas about how citizens in America could take action to stop the unfiltered proliferation of mercury in our air.
Yeah, there is actually a website you can go to called Citicama, I think. It's Citizens Against the Building of Crematories. And if you were to Google it, you can find it. It's how I found it.
Okay, I'll link to it too.
And they have a lot of community support. They've done all the work in 33 states. So you can get a petition together. You can take it to the city. It's going to those places and say, you know, we don't want any more crematories built until there are adequate mercury filters and filters for the other dirty dozen that are also in mercury vapors. Also electing now, like today, to say, I choose not to be cremated, and to document that in your will. And you say, what is the most environmentally responsible form of death care? I've been researching this for 10 years. The most environmentally responsible choice that we have today is a certified conservation burial. And so you choose to be interred in a certified cemetery that doesn't have anything to do with pesticides, herbicides, any kind of chemicals.
So it's like land conservation, and then you can be just laid in the ground as a human with a shroud.
Right. And some of them are certified, some of them are not, but you can go to the conservationburialalliance.org website, and they have a list of where you can go to be interred in a conservation cemetery. And if you don't have that, go to the greenburialcouncil.org website, and they have a list of about 60 plus cemeteries across the country where you can have a natural burial or a hybrid burial in a conventional cemetery, as well as the conservation cemeteries. And the thing I want to say about that is, mercury, you say, well, what happens to the mercury in our bodies? Well, it goes into the earth, and it very slowly trickles down over time, deep, deep, back into the earth where it should be. And that is the most responsible thing we have, given that, and cemeteries can legally be moved, but as a land-trusted easement, it doesn't ever get moved. And so that's why it's so important for mercury, because we're not digging up bodies, we're not. That land that's set aside is held in perpetuity. It's held forever, not only as a cemetery, moving them into a new cemetery. We're actually saying that this is preserved land. It's also a nature sanctuary, and it has multiple functions for public access. People can go and enjoy their loved ones as well as nature. So it's got lots of possibilities. And the main thing is that we can make this choice now. And we can, you know, because if you leave it to the time of your death, which could be tomorrow, or it could be in 50 years, if you leave it to those people who have to make the choices around your interment or your cremation, they're going to go with whatever they think is the right thing, and they might not know about mercury.
Oh, and it's such a stressful time when someone you love is dying. It's a hard time to make big decisions. You know, it's never too soon to take action, and we never know. We never know when we'll need it, honestly. So in your book, The New American Way of Death, do you talk about how to get mercury out of your body once you get it in there?
Yes, I do. And Dr. Boyd Haley, Professor Haley is emeritus. He's retired now, but he's working very hard on getting amiramide passed through the FDA. And when that comes out in a year or two by prescription through your doctor, you will be able to request amyramide if you have any of these symptoms. And, you know, the symptoms are so vast that you could have two or three symptoms and qualify for amyramide chelation. And you can go to amyramide.com and learn about it. It's a chelator of heavy metals like no other chelator that we've ever been able to work with. And Dr. Haley designed it so that dropping them in your blood to cause more side effects. But it not only pulled the mercury and other toxins out of your body, other heavy metals, but it also takes it out through your excrement into the sewer. And the mercury doesn't let go from the amyramide until it's caught in the earth. And so it's really important if you do any kind of chelation to make sure that it's environmentally appropriate and safe for your own body.
Conventional, that's exciting.
Yes, it's really exciting. And amyramide, it has so many purposes, not just for our own bodies, but for ocean mammals who are suffering with very like off the charts, like 200 parts per million of mercury in their tissues, in their brains. And
they haven't heard yet that you're not allowed to eat the fish.
That's right. Yeah, you're not supposed to eat the fish.
Exactly. Tell that to the sea lions, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So if you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to What Mama Wants, Less Toxics and More Health. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Diana Cunningham. As a healthcare provider and a daughter and a parent, when you realized that cremation exhaust was filled with mercury and other toxics, you got involved in the green burial movement to avoid the spread of mercury in large part. You've told us a little bit about conservation cemeteries, and I wonder if you can say anything about why people are wanting this now. Why are people moving towards conservation cemeteries and green burials?
Well, there was a survey done of 100 people in Massachusetts with the Kestrel Land Trust and a group of citizens. And they talked to local people. And what these people said was, what we want is we want accessibility to our loved ones when they die. And they want to be able to access them to go and visit the grave, to go and stay in touch and to honor that person. And the other thing they said was, if we had a choice, we'd like to have a tree planted at the site of our burial. Well, this is a wonderful thing. Who wouldn't want a tree? You know, it's something that grows. It's a way that our bodies can nourish something and bring life to it. We can go and visit it over time. If we are so lucky enough to live in a rural zoned area, we can have a burial, and depending on our local laws, county laws and state laws about private burials on our own land, we can plant a tree, we can watch it grow over the decades, and then at the time of our death, we can know that we're going to continue to nourish the tree.
That's so beautiful.
It is absolutely beautiful, and it makes death natural, and it makes death something you can look forward to. You know, you don't think about, oh, I got to go buy some exotic wood casket for $10,000 or $20,000, or some veneer-covered plywood casket, which is really what you're often paying for. And all the resources that are lost when we buy something at a funeral home, and when we just simply inter our bodies in a biodegradable casket or in just a shroud, that's really what Mama wants. That's what the earth wants. She wants to be able to use these resources and recycle them again and again and re-nourish the earth. And we are from the earth. Our bodies are from the earth. And when we give back to the earth after a lifetime of nourishment of food and water that has sustained us in our life, we get to give it back to the earth. And what more beautiful thing to do, you know, than that, and to nourish a tree. And if you can't have a tree, at least you can return your body to the earth where those nutrients can be allowed to naturally merge with the soil and replenish the soil.
I bet Mama Earth would rejoice in having her people back. Where did we come from? It's also something Mama, who is alive, might appreciate because it's so much more affordable.
The average conservation burial cost for a plot is about $3,000. And that may seem high to some people. And then you think, well, then there's the cost of a biodegradable casket. At our project, we're looking at making the price to be about $1,000 for a basic and simple shroud burial. And $1,000 is affordable for most people. It's the same price as about a cremation. So we're hopeful that people will start being able to benefit from a lowered price.
It's affordable, it's accessible, and it's natural. Great. I want to close this interview with you, Diana, by asking a couple quick questions about your relationship to the earth, if you're game.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. As a kid, what was your favorite thing to do outside?
My favorite thing was to walk amongst wildflowers and to sit under trees. And we had a hammock, and I just loved nature. I grew up in upstate New York and New England. And when I was a teenager, it was what I lived for. I couldn't wait to get home from school and just go out and walk in the woods. And, you know, it's where my heart is.
Beautiful. Can you describe a scene in nature where you have felt awe?
Where I have felt awe is many, many times in nature. You know, there's the typical midnight looking up at the stars and the wonder. And there's also just the wonder at the side of the ocean, of the vastness of it. And also, I have been to some amazing conservation burials where a tree was planted, where we put the soil in, we decorated the grave with beautiful plantings and mounded up the soil. And what I have come to is that this is all sacred. Everything about this is sacred. The nature is sacred. The soil is sacred. The earth is sacred. Our bodies are sacred, even with all the pollutants. Everything about us is sacred. And it's time that we acknowledge that and go back to that, you know, fundamental feeling of awe in us. If we haven't had that experience, to try and go out in the weekend and leave the city and just sit quietly and close your eyes and feel into your body as a beautiful and natural and sacred part of the earth, you know? So that's what I would leave you with. And that there's hope for Mercury. There's hope for humanity. You know, you hear about all these toxins and you think, oh God, I have so many of these symptoms. You know, I could get dementia in 5 years or whatever. And you think, well, but you know, just sit here now and remember who you are. Remember your sacredness. Remember the beauty of your body and how sacred that is.
Be the human you were born to be. What's one thing your mother taught you about Mother Earth?
My mother loved trees. She loved being up on the side of a hill where she grew up on a farm in Ohio and looking at the sky. And her mother used to just, you know, constantly getting on her about just lying in the middle of the grass, looking up at the sky and get in here and do your chores, you know? And it's just what kids do. It's what we do. It's what we want to do is to just rediscover nature and how wonderful it is to just rest and relax and feel the pulse, feel the Mother Earth's pulse. And it's so, so low and slow and easy, you know, compared to our frenzy that we live in most days in a city. It's a wonderful experience to have, and that our bodies have that same pulse, you know.
Your mama would be so proud of you, both for caring about what's going on in the sky and the trees. What's one thing you wonder about in nature?
I wonder how Mother Earth will cope over 1,000 years with all of the human-made chemicals and the naturally occurring heavy metals and things that we have pulled out of the earth and imposed on her. And I trust that she will survive, you know. But what I don't know about is how we humans will make choices that will really benefit her. This is why I am so compelled to talk about this. Everybody needs to realize that we live in a toxic world. We're swimming. And mercury, you know, if we could see invisible mercury fumes and we could walk in them and feel them and realize what it's doing to our bodies, we would not hesitate to stop cremation, to stop putting mercury dental fillings in our mouths, to detoxify the fish. And so anyway.
Yeah. Maybe it's too bad it's not tasteable and not smellable so we could see it.
Exactly.
Final question. What's your favorite baby animal?
My favorite baby animal, well, it's baby seals, baby otters. And yeah, because they're amazing. Yeah.
They're fun. Diana, you are sounding the alarm regarding Mercury crisis, and at the same time, you work to balance your life with the beauty and nature that we can find in this lifetime with reverence to the mysteries of our existence. Thank you so much for the work you're doing and for being my guest today.
Thank you, Kate, and thanks for listening, and thanks to all your listeners to making incredible choices.